The Synthesis of Yoga, Sri Aurobindo. Continuing with the introduction, the conditions of the synthesis, chapter 4, the systems of yoga, picking up on page 36. This is the first step only. Afterwards, the ordinary activities of the mind and sense must be entirely quieted in order that the soul may be free to ascend to higher states of consciousness and acquire the foundation for a perfect freedom and self-mastery. But Raja Yoga does not forget that the disabilities of the ordinary mind proceed largely from its subjection to the reactions of the nervous system and the body. It adopts, therefore, from the Hatha yogic system, its devices of asana and pranayama, but reduces their multiple and elaborate forms in each case to one simplest and most directly effective process sufficient for its own immediate object. Thus it gets rid of the Hatha yogic complexity and cumbrousness while it utilizes the swift and powerful efficacy of its methods for the control of the body and the vital functions and for the awakening of that internal dynamism full of a latent supernormal faculty typified in yogic terminology by the kundalini, the coiled and sleeping serpent of energy within. This done, the system proceeds to the perfect quieting of the restless mind and its elevation to a higher plane through concentration of mental force by the successive stages which lead to the utmost inner concentration or ingathered state of the consciousness, which is called samadhi. By samadhi, in which the mind acquires the capacity of withdrawing from its limited waking activities into freer and higher states of consciousness, Raja Yoga serves a double purpose. It compasses a pure mental action liberated from the confusions of the outer consciousness and passes thence to the higher supramental planes on which the individual soul enters into its true spiritual existence. But also, it acquires the capacity of that free and concentrated energizing of consciousness on its object, which our philosophy asserts as the primary cosmic energy and the method of divine action upon the world. By this capacity, the yogin, already possessed of the higher supracosmic knowledge and experience in the state of trance, is able, in the waking state, to acquire directly whatever knowledge and exercise whatever mastery may be useful or necessary to his activities in the objective world. For the ancient system of Raja Yoga aimed not only at swarajya, self-rule, or subjective empire, the entire control by the subjective consciousness of all the states and activities proper to its own domain, but included samrajya as well, outward empire, the control by the subjective consciousness of its outer activities and environment. We perceive that as Hatha Yoga, dealing with the life and body, aims at the supernormal perfection of the physical life and its capacities, and goes beyond it into the domain of the mental life, so Raja Yoga, operating with the mind, aims at a supernormal perfection and enlargement of the capacities of the mental life, and goes beyond it into the domain of the spiritual existence. But the weakness of the system lies in its excessive reliance on abnormal states of trance, This limitation leads first to a certain aloofness from the physical life, which is our foundation and the sphere into which we have to bring our mental and spiritual gains. Especially is the spiritual life in this system too much associated with the state of samadhi. Our object is to make the spiritual life and its experiences fully active and fully utilizable in the waking state, and even in the normal use of the functions. But in Raja Yoga, it tends to withdraw into a subliminal plane at the back of our normal experiences, instead of descending and possessing our whole existence. The triple path of devotion, knowledge, and works attempts at the province which Raja Yoga leaves unoccupied. It differs from Raja Yoga in that it does not occupy itself with the elaborate training of the whole mental system as the condition of perfection, but seizes on certain central principles, the intellect, the heart, the will, and seeks to convert their normal operations by turning them away from their ordinary and external preoccupations and activities and concentrating them on the divine. It differs also in this, and here, from the point of view of an integral yoga, there seems to be a defect, that it is indifferent to mental and bodily perfection and aims only at purity as a condition of the divine realization. A second defect is that, as actually practiced, it chooses one of the three parallel paths exclusively and almost in antagonism to the others, instead of effecting a synthetic harmony of the intellect, the heart, and the will in an integral divine realization. The path of knowledge aims at the realization of the unique and supreme self. It proceeds by the method of intellectual reflection, vikara, to right discrimination, viveka. It observes and distinguishes the different elements of our apparent or phenomenal being, and rejecting identification with each of them, arrives at their exclusion and separation in one common term as constituents of prakriti, of phenomenal nature, creations of maya, the phenomenal consciousness. So, it is able to arrive at its right identification with the pure and unique self, which is not mutable or perishable, not determinable by any phenomenon or combination of phenomena. From this point, the path, as ordinarily followed, leads to the rejection of the phenomenal worlds from the consciousness as an illusion, and the final emergence without return of the individual soul in the Supreme. But this exclusive consummation is not the sole or inevitable result of the path of knowledge. For, followed more largely and with a less individual aim, the method of knowledge may lead to an active conquest of the cosmic existence for the divine, no less than to a transcendence. The point of this departure is the realization of the Supreme Self, not only in one's own being, but in all beings, and finally, the realization of even the phenomenal aspects of the world as a play of the divine consciousness, and not something entirely alien to its true nature. And on the basis of this realization, a yet further enlargement is possible. The conversion of all forms of knowledge, however mundane, into activities of the divine consciousness utilizable for the perception of the one and unique object of knowledge, both in itself and through the play of its forms and symbols. Such a method might well lead to the elevation of the whole range of human intellect and perception to the divine level, to its spiritualization, and to the justification of the cosmic travail of knowledge in humanity. The path of devotion aims at the enjoyment of the supreme love and bliss, and utilizes normally the conception of the Supreme Lord in his personality as the divine lover and enjoyer of the universe. The world is then realized as a play of the Lord, with our human life as its final stage, pursued through the different phases of self-concealment and self-revelation. The principle of bhakti yoga is to utilize all the normal relations of human life into which emotion enters and apply them no longer to transient worldly relations, but to the joy of the all-loving, the all-beautiful, and the all-blissful. Worship and meditation are used only for the preparation and increase of intensity of the divine relationship. And this yoga is Catholic in its use of all emotional relations, so that even enmity and opposition to God, considered as an intense, impatient, and perverse form of love, is conceived as a possible means of realization and salvation. This path, too, as ordinarily practiced, leads away from world existence to an absorption of another kind than the monists in the transcendent and supracosmic. But here, too, the exclusive result is not inevitable. The yoga itself provides a first corrective by not confining the play of divine love to the relation between the Supreme Soul and the individual, but extending it to a common feeling and mutual worship between the devotees themselves, united in the same realization of the supreme love and bliss. It provides a yet more general corrective in the realization of the divine object of love in all beings, not only human, but animal, easily extended to all forms whatsoever. We can see how this larger application of the yoga of devotion may be so used as to lead to the elevation of the whole range of human emotion, sensation, and aesthetic perception to the divine level, its spiritualization, and the justification of the cosmic labor towards love and joy in our humanity. The path of works aims at the dedication of every human activity to the supreme will. It begins by the renunciation of all egoistic aim for our works, all pursuit of action for an interested aim or for the sake of a worldly result. By this renunciation, it so purifies the mind and the will that we become easily conscious of the great universal energy as the true doer of all our actions, and the Lord of that energy as their ruler and director, with the individual as only a mask, an excuse, an instrument, or, more positively, a conscious center of action and phenomenal relation. The choice and direction of the act is more and more consciously left to this supreme will and this universal energy. To that, our works, as well as the results of our works, are finally abandoned. The object is the release of the soul from its bondage to appearances and to the reaction of phenomenal activities. Karma Yoga Karma Yoga is used, like the other paths, to lead to liberation from phenomenal existence and a departure into the Supreme. But here too, the exclusive result is not inevitable. The end of the path may be, equally, a perception of the divine in all energies, in all happenings, in all activities, and free and unegoistic participation of the soul in the cosmic action. So followed, it will lead to the elevation of all human will and activity to the divine level. Its spiritualization and the justification of the cosmic labor towards freedom, power, and perfection in the human being. We can see also that in the integral view of things, these three paths are one. Divine love should normally lead to the perfect knowledge of the beloved by perfect intimacy, thus becoming a path of knowledge, and to divine service, thus becoming a path of works. So also should perfect knowledge lead to perfect love and joy and a full acceptance of the works of that which is known. Dedicated works to the entire love of the master of the sacrifice and the deepest knowledge of his ways and his being. It is in this triple path that we come most readily to the absolute knowledge, love, and service of the One in all beings and in the entire cosmic manifestation. End of chapter 4, page 40.